Inhuman, The Monster of Cleveland is a podcast that uses adult language and discusses sensitive and potentially triggering topics, including violence and abuse. This podcast may not be appropriate for younger audiences. Listener discretion is advised. What's up, you guys? I'm Haley.
And I'm Andrea.
And this is Inhuman, The Monster of Cleveland. Guys, so this is episode 10. Today we are going to be talking about Ariel Castro and what happened to him, you know, after the girls escaped and all of that stuff. And, you know, this is kind of the last episode we're really going to be talking about him and focusing on him. But yeah, so be sure that if you haven't listened to the last episode, episode 9, that one is like definitely the best one, but it's the one where we talked about how they escaped and how they were, you know, finally set free. Oh, great, Rob's home. Hopefully he'll be quiet. I'll stop if he comes in and then I can like, start over.
Yeah, that's fine.
Oh, wow. He actually texted me. I told him to text me when he was on his way, but he just texted me saying here.
It's like, oh, by the way, I'm here.
So yeah, be sure to listen to episode 9 before you listen to this one because you won't want to miss hearing about their escape. And we kind of talked a little bit about like what, you know, after they escaped and some of the things we're going to talk about right now happened like at the same time as that. So we're going to kind of like rewind back to May, the beginning of, not the beginning of, but May 6th, basically like right after they escaped. That's where we're going to start off this episode today. So on May 6th, the girls escaped and they were, you know, heading to the hospital at the hospital. And the chatter among police was obviously hectic looking for Castro. So they didn't know where he was. They just knew he wasn't at the house. Two officers, Dan Brill and Mike Hageman, heard the call about the suspect in his car, and even though they wanted to go to Seymour Avenue, they knew that they needed to just look for him because half of the police were down at Seymour Avenue, and they knew that they needed to get out and start looking for him. So finally, they saw a car that matched the description, and after confirming the license plate number, they pulled up behind the car in a McDonald's parking lot. Ariel Castro was the driver of the car, and his brother, I don't know how to say this, O'Neill.
I'm not sure. O'Neill or O'Neill, I don't know. I would think.
Yeah, okay. So apologies for saying that wrong, but his brother was in the passenger seat. Ariel was silent when the police approached, while his brother was confused, assuming that their other brother, Pedro, I think, maybe Pedro, but probably Pedro, had gotten into trouble again. So Ariel was just like quiet, and then his other brother in the car was freaking out, like, what the heck is going on?
Right. Assuming. Yeah.
Right. So Ariel Castro remained quiet and seemed stunned when he was told that he was being held on suspicion of kidnapping, but he still stayed quiet and both men were taken down to the station. And I feel like this is like, you know, he obviously knew, and although he was like seemed stunned, he was also being quiet. And like, if you were truly being suspected for something that you didn't do, you would be freaking out and like, what's going on? Like asking questions.
And he probably was, you know, trying to put up a front with his brother and like acting like, oh, what happened? No, I didn't do that. You know, even though he was very guilty.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, hold on. I'm going to close the door. Did you hear Mackie bark?
A little bit, yeah. It wasn't too loud, though.
Okay, so they actually ended up arresting Ariel and both of his brothers. I'm not going to say their names because I'm probably saying them wrong. But they ended up arresting both the brothers because they didn't know at this point, like, who exactly was responsible. So while his brother that was in the car with him was freaking out and upset about being arrested, Ariel never asked a single question about why he was being held. So even though, again, he seemed shocked, he didn't ask, like, what's going on. He just was quiet.
And I'm glad that they arrested the other two brothers just to be on the safe side, because I feel like they always almost err on the opposite side of caution.
Right.
But they, you know, they took that extra step and just went ahead and arrested all of them because they really didn't know what was going on.
Yeah. No, I know. I'm glad that they did that, too. That's a good point. All right. So be ready to get mad at this fuckwad even more. I love that. I swear, writing this entire episode, I was just so pissed off the whole time.
Yeah.
So a Cleveland police officer, Larry Guerra, I think, could be saying that wrong.
I think it's, I don't know. I was going to roll my R because I think it's the
Guerra. I know. Guerra.
Guerra. I think that's from Dexter. Yeah. I remember that last name, Dexter.
Yeah, yeah, I think it is.
I think it was LaGuerra, but.
Yeah, LaGuerra, yeah. So this officer, Larry Guerra, that's how I'm going to say it. Sorry if it's wrong. Who was friends with Castro, saw him in the holding cell and asked him what happened. And Castro said, quote, "I really fucked up, man." And after Guerra warned Castro that, like, he's police and anything he says could be used against him, Castro said, quote, "I don't care. I'm a victim here, too. I didn't take those girls. They came with me. I didn't make them do anything. I was abused, too, as a kid."
Okay. You're not a fucking victim.
No.
Period.
No.
No. And you should care.
Even if you, yeah, even if you were abused as a kid, that doesn't, like,
no,
that's not an excuse for any of this, and you still are a terrible, awful human being that did this. Like,
yeah, you don't get a free pass to do whatever the any fucked up shit that you want to do just because you had a supposed fucked up situation happen to you as a kid.
Right. Nope. Right. He's just playing the victim. He's coming up with excuses. Mm-hmm. And at this point, he kept talking to Guerra, saying that he didn't force them to do anything and that everything they did was on their own terms. And finally, Guerra walked away and he wanted, like, in his mind, he was like, "I want to just tell him to go to hell."
Yeah, I don't blame him.
So, you know, thankfully he didn't believe any of the lies.
Yeah, that's good. I don't know how anyone could.
Yeah, no. So on May 7th, the next day, police searched Castro's house, finding 90 feet of chains, padlocks, deadbolts, and Castro's little manifesto confession document that he wrote back in April of 2004. Wow. So he clearly knew he was doing something wrong because he wrote this. And he wrote it back in April of 2004, 2 days after he took Gina.
Right.
Like,
oh. Oh. Yeah, I would love to get my hands on that, honestly. I haven't seen anything in any of my research to expose that, but...
Yeah, I was just going to say, there were a couple, like, excerpts in Amanda and Gina's book. I didn't include them in my notes, but there were, like, a few little excerpts, and I talk a little bit about it here.
Okay.
So, in that letter... he apologized, saying he was abused as a kid and that he was sick and needed help. He also talked about how he had money that should go to the victims. And like I said, the letter was dated 2 days after he took Gina, and he explained to officers, quote, "In case something ever happened to me, I wanted you guys to see that I'm a victim." So, like, basically the whole letter was more of his shit, like, just send it, you know, saying I'm a victim and that's why I did this and I'm mentally sick and I have a sexual problem and all the same excuses we've heard him make. And he's going to continue to make as the whole, like, interrogation and trial and everything goes on. So, yeah, he literally wrote that because he was worried that one day he'd get caught and he wanted to tell people that he was a victim and not a bad guy.
Trying to cover his own ass like that would actually make anyone think any differently of him. That's a joke.
Disgusting. Like, this guy just keeps getting sicker and sicker. Mm-hmm. So that day he was interrogated and it was more the same shit. He talked about his childhood and his first marriage and how he was mentally sick. And if you guys remember back from, I think it was the first episode, in his first marriage, he, like, abused his wife so bad and, like, hurt her so much. Yeah.
Didn't she have, like, a,
you know,
brain injury? Like, her brain was bleeding because of his abuse?
Yeah. Like, a lot of stuff happened with her, and I think he was in this, like, interrogation, he was trying to talk about how, like, he didn't do anything wrong and whatever. Like, he, it's just more of this same shit. He's trying to say that he did nothing wrong. So he cried during multiple parts of the interview, especially when talking about Jocelyn. He said that he was attracted to both Amanda and Gina, and that's why he took them. And he even said, quote, "I did something very cold-blooded to my daughter. I passed her to go get Gina." Because if you remember, Gina was walking home with his daughter. And he literally admitted, like, "I saw her. She was attractive. And I, like, drove past my daughter and went to get Gina."
And the fact that he admitted to being attracted to two children.
Right.
Like, are That's you like, kidding me?
Yeah. They, like, that in and of itself is a crime.
Right. Period.
Yeah. Disgusting. And he actually said, I didn't write this down, so I can't remember exactly what he said, but he said that because he knew Gina's dad and he knew Gina, and he said he didn't recognize her at first, and if he had, he would have just like taken her home. And he didn't recognize her as like Felix's daughter. And I believe that because I think that he like, didn't want to like take somebody that he could be linked to. You know, I mean, it's selfish, obviously.
Right. And wasn't there something said that there was another girl that looked like Gina that he initially planned to take or something? I recall reading.
There may have been. Yeah. Yeah, I kind of vaguely remember that too.
Yeah.
So during this whole interview, he seemed to have that Jekyll and Hyde personality that you're always mentioning, Andrea. He really was going back and forth between saying it was all consensual to then saying they were victims. So he couldn't make up his mind. Like, I think he was just spewing whatever was coming out of his brain. Mm-hmm. And he even admitted to officers that he was a sexual predator, saying that a predator does it more than once. Like, he was literally like, "Well, I'm not an offender, like, because they only do it once. I'm a predator because I did it more than once." So he knew he was doing something wrong, but then he still tried to go back and say it was consensual.
Right. He was grasping at straws, but predator, whatever, you're still a sick person, a criminal. I mean, you're just a criminal that needs to be punished.
Yeah, 100%. So, you know, and like I said, I was so frustrated reading this, and there were like more details in Amanda and Gina's book about like what was going on during the interview, but I could only include so much because I was like, this, like, it just comes down to the fact that he kept going back and forth between saying, you know, he's a victim and it's consensual to saying, "Oh yeah, I'm a bad guy and need help and did something bad." So like, that's all you need to know, basically.
Right.
So finally, he talked about the day they escaped, and he said that he purposefully left the door unlocked because Jocelyn had been complaining about always being locked inside, and he said that he knew he let his guard down, and so, you know, that's kind of what we were talking about, I think, in last week's episode about how, like, he really was, like, letting his guard down and knowing that he was going to get caught eventually. Like, he was making comments and saying stuff that made me think, at least, that he knew he was going to get caught. So I think it was almost like a mistake that he, whether or not he realized he made it, like, whether it was like a conscious mistake or an unconscious mistake, I think he was like exhausted from leading this double life and wanted to get caught.
Yeah, I agree. I think part of him definitely wanted to get caught.
Yeah. And it really was Jocelyn that kind of softened him up and was their saving angel sent from Amanda's mom. So less than 3 months later, Castro pleaded guilty to 937 felony counts. At his sentencing, Amanda and Gina sent family members to read statements. However, Michelle was there.
So on August 1st, Castro's sentencing hearing was scheduled, and Michelle, without hesitation, knew that she wanted to testify. Her lawyers, wanting to protect her, they asked her multiple times if she really wanted to do it, if she was sure, and she said, "I need to face my demon," aka Ariel fucking Castro.
Good for her. That's I don't think I would be able to do that.
I don't think I would either. And I think I told you, I texted you last night when I was watching her testimony, like her actual testimony, like the video from it, and it was heartbreaking. Like, she was so strong, and she was just trying to keep it together the whole time. Like, I don't think I could have done it.
Right. Especially like right there with him looking at you. Like, it's not just like you're writing a letter or saying something, like, you're talking to him. Right. And in such a short time period after, like it was only a couple months after, like
right.
If it was years after, then that's one thing. Like, I think when I was reading stuff kind of about what happened after, like Amanda was like, I'm frustrated that we're not going to get to confront him, because it's like years later and you're like, okay, I'm healed. Like, I want to confront him. But right after, like that takes a lot of strength.
Those wounds were still open and very raw for sure.
Yeah.
So a few weeks before, Michelle actually called Gina and spoke to her on the phone, and she told her that she was planning to testify and asked Gina, you know, was she planning to testify as well? And Gina said that she wasn't sure and she didn't think that she was ready, which I completely understand, you know, with everything we just said. And Michelle understood that too. She felt that they each had the right to testify or not, and they needed to make that decision, you know, for themselves and what was best for themselves and their mental health. And she believed that Gina made the right decision, and she completely understood the two girls not wanting to stand up.
Right. Well, and I feel like too, like Gina was so much younger, and obviously they're all older now, but like when Michelle was captured, she was like 21 and she was, you know, a little bit older at least, and even Amanda was 17, but Gina was 14. And I feel like, you know, as much as they did grow up in the house and like age wise they were older, I'm sure that they, you know, were still, you know, they were stuck in a house, so they could only grow up so much,
right? And exactly. So, no experience, like no life experience that helps you actually grow up,
right?
And Michelle, she was such a little pistol. I mean, even when she was in the house, it seems like.
Right.
I'm really not surprised that she decided to testify, like, honestly.
Yeah, I'm not either. Of the three of them, I would expect her to be the one to testify.
Even though she did testify, like, I know that it had to be so super hard for her to do that.
Oh, yeah.
And as we'll see shortly, Gina actually sent her sister to speak on her behalf. So the day of, when Michelle walked into the courtroom, she said that Castro was staring at her the whole entire time, as though, you know, pleading with Michelle to tell them that she didn't do those things, that he wasn't this monster that everyone now thought he was, and it made Michelle completely disgusted.
That's, like, surprising to me that he did that with her, because, like you said, she was, like, a pistol in the house and, like, did not take any shit from him, especially compared to the other two. Like, so it's, I mean, I, you know, he's going to do everything he can, but.
Right. Like, I think, I feel like so part sick. Of it is because, like we've said, you know, multiple times, he was the worst to her as far as, like, the physical, the emotional.
True.
Maybe not the sexual, I don't really know the details of all that, but like, you know, mentally and physically, I feel like he was the worst to her. So he knew that probably his fate was like mostly in her hands. Obviously that the whole thing is just fucked up, the whole situation period. But, and she was the only one that showed up to court. So,
right.
So when it was finally time for Michelle to make her statement, she stood up, hands trembling, but courageous, and she spoke. And I'm going to quote it word for word, and it is a little long, so just bear with me, but I felt like it was important to reiterate her statement. Okay, quote, "Good afternoon. My name is Michelle Knight, and I want to tell you what it, wait, and I want to tell you what this was like for me. I miss my son every day. I wondered if I was ever going to see him again. He was only 2 and a half when I was taken. I look inside my heart and I see my son. I cried every night. I was so alone. I worried about what would happen to me and the other girls every day. Days never got shorter. Days turned into nights. Nights turned into days. Years turned into eternity. I knew nobody cared about me. He told me that my family didn't care, even on holidays. Christmas was the most traumatic day because I never got to spend it with my son. Nobody should ever have to go through what I went through, not even my worst enemy. Gina was my teammate. She never let me fall. I never let her fall. She nursed me back to health when I was dying from his abuse. My friendship with her was the only thing that was good from this situation. We said that someday we would make it out alive, and we did. Ariel Castro, I remember all the times that you came home talking about what everyone else did wrong and acted like you wasn't doing the same things. You said, at least I didn't kill you. You took 11 years of my life away, and I have got it back. I spent 11 years in hell. Now your hell is just beginning. I have goosebumps. Ugh.
Yeah, I do too.
I will overcome all that. Wait. I will overcome all this that happened, but you will face hell for eternity. From this moment on, I will not let you define me or affect who I am. I will live on, but you will die a little every day. As you think about the 11 years and the atrocities you inflicted on us, what does God think of you hypocritically going to church every Sunday? Coming home to torture us? The death penalty would be so much easier. You do not deserve that. You deserve to spend a life in prison. I can forgive you, but I will never forget. With the guidance of God, I will prevail and help others that suffered at the hands of others. Writing this statement gave me the strength to be a stronger woman and know that there's good. There is more good than evil. I know that there are many people going through hard times, but we need to reach out a hand and hold them and let them know they're being heard. After 11 years, I'm finally being heard, and it's liberating. Thank you all. I love you, and God bless you.
Hell yes, Michelle.
I know. I love that. It was like, I was bawling, like literally bawling my eyes out watching that last night. And it was just like, I felt like so sad for her, but also felt like so happy that like she really does feel set free.
Yeah. Yeah. When you told me last night that you were like crying listening to it, I was about to go watch it. And then I was like, no, I need to wait so I can have like a genuine reaction. Yes. And I literally, as you were reading that, started crying. I had goosebumps. Like,
yeah.
Oh my gosh. That is just, she freaking killed it.
Yeah, she did. She really did.
And it feels like from that, she was really able to like use that to move past it.
Yeah. She even says in her book, like that moment was the first real step, like to healing for her after her escape. And she even said like on May 6th, her body was set free from the rapes and the abuse. But on that day, her spirit and her emotions were set free.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, good for her. She is freaking incredible.
I know. She's a badass.
She really is. Wow. Well, I'm so glad that she got to say her piece and, you know, confront him directly. Like and she did a hell of a job with it.
Yeah. And like I told you last night when I was watching it, like they panned over to Castro and he was just sitting there with this like smirk, like the smug little smirk, and I wanted to come through the TV and like beat his ass.
Yeah,
it's like, how can you sit there with that?
And honestly, just knowing him, I'm sure that that's what he had on the outside, but I bet it was killing him inside. Yeah. Hearing her be free, especially with her, because he like hated her so much, so that makes it even better. So after that, Castro's final statement included him talking about how there was harmony in the house and how he was sorry, asking for forgiveness from the victims. And I want to read what the judge said to him because it is so freaking badass. He was clearly disgusted by Castro. And like you just said, Andrea, for that last part, it's kind of long, but I just had to include it because I love when judges do this. Like, it's just the best thing ever.
It's like, and a big fuck you.
Yeah, it's the absolute best. Okay. Quote, "Sir, there is no place for you in this city. There is no place for you in this country. Indeed, there is no place in this world for those who enslave others, those who sexually assault others, and those who brutalize others. For more than 10 years, you have preyed upon 3 young women. You subjected them to harsh and violent conduct. You felt you were dominating them, but you were incorrect. You did not take away their dignity. Although they suffered terribly, Miss Knight, Miss De Jesus, and Miss Barry did not give up hope. They have persevered. In fact, they have prevailed. These remarkable women again have their freedom, which is the most precious aspect of being an American. Mr. Castro, you forfeited that right. You now become a number with the Department of Rehabilitation and Correction. You will be confined for the remainder of your remainder of your days. Why can't I talk today?
It's hard when you're like making a big quote like that, I think, because I was having right. I was struggling too.
Yeah, it is. Okay.
Okay.
You will be confined for the remainder of your days. You are hereby, I wrote remanded. Is that the right word? Might not be the right word.
Remanded for
transport?
I don't know.
I feel like maybe it is. That's what I wrote from the quote, but I also could have typed it wrong.
Yeah. It means to place on bail or in custody. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think that's right.
Yeah. Okay. You are hereby remanded for transport to Lorain Correctional Institution. Castro was sentenced to life plus 1,000 years and was taken away. Thank God.
Thank God. Off the streets, you sick fuck.
Yeah. So despite me messing up that quote a little bit, it is so freaking badass. I love how he was just like, you are disgusting. You don't deserve to be alive, basically.
Exactly. That's what he wanted to say, but he couldn't say it because he's a judge.
Right. So in his jail cell, Castro was completely isolated. He wasn't in like the general population. And of course, he was complaining immediately. He was constantly complaining about his food and he would rarely actually eat. He complained about his dirty cell, his boring life, saying, quote, I will not take this kind of treatment for much longer. I feel as though I'm being pushed over the edge one day at a time. And yep, that's what you fucking deserve, asshole. Like,
right. You should be pushed over the edge 1 second at a time because that's how what you did to those girls.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure your conditions in jail are still better than how those three girls were living for the majority of their time in your house.
You have an actual toilet.
Yeah.
For one.
Yeah.
A hot meal.
You have clean clothes, a hot meal. Yeah.
Disgusting. Fuck you.
Yeah. And another just additional trigger warning here. This part does include suicidal thoughts and ideation. I just wanted to throw that in there. So the book I read did go into more detail about Castro's time in prison, specifically about like his complaints and what he spent his days doing. If you guys are interested in that, you can look it up. But as far as I'm concerned, he doesn't deserve any more time spent talking about him. We know that he was miserable and wasn't happy.
And I will co-sign on that.
So on September 3rd, 2013, Castro received dinner from a guard at 5:29 p.m. Guards continued to check his cell throughout the night, but at 9:18 p.m., 27 minutes after the previous check, a guard looked into his cell and saw that Castro had hanged himself. Paramedics didn't arrive until 10:05 p.m., at which point he was transported to a hospital and pronounced dead at 10:52 p.m. Michelle was in his prison for 3,909 days, Amanda for 3,665 days, and Gina for 3,321 days. And Castro, he spent 33 days in prison and couldn't bear it any longer. He took his own life because he couldn't stand to be in prison. So I just hope that he is rotting in hell.
I also hope that his rotten, cowardice, poor excuse for a human being self is rotting in hell. I'm sure he is rotting in hell.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure he's like, what was it? Have you seen The Good Place?
Yes.
The I've show?
Seen, well, not all of it. And how, I've watched a lot of it, yeah.
There's like the people in hell, they have like spiders coming out of their butts and like a bunch of like really bad punishments. I hope like that he is getting all of that right now.
Yeah, me too.
Like I hope that he is living the worst life ever. I hope he's chained up and just ugh.
Yeah.
Pisses me off so much that he committed
to the coward. I know. He took the coward's way out. And honestly, I mean, I know that when you are hanged, you do suffer, but it was nothing compared to the suffering that he put on those girls. And no. I don't know if you heard this, but I heard, and it was like in one or two sources, that he was doing the like sexual asphyxiation. Have you heard that? Like they think he like did it on accident, but I don't believe that.
I think it was on accident. They talked about that in the book, and because they found him, his pants were off when they found him. So I think that's part of why they thought that. But when, at least like in the book that I read and like when they were explaining it, for one, his underwear had recently been taken for laundry. So he didn't have that. And that was like the last thing, I don't know if he wrote it down or that he complained about, but the last thing he complained about, whether written or just verbally, was that his underwear weren't back from the laundry. And then he had lost like a ton of weight because he kept refusing to eat, because he kept thinking that people were poisoning him and that the food was disgusting. So he wasn't eating. So he refused to eat. And so they believe that that's why his pants had fallen down.
Yeah.
And I think they kind of like investigated that. And there is a whole little like section in the book that talked about it. And they came to the conclusion in that it didn't have anything to do with any type of like sexual motive. And I believe that based on like what I've read.
Yeah, so do I. I don't think that's what he was trying to achieve. I think he was being a cowardice little nutsack and took his own life.
Yeah, I think you're right. I love that's like the second time you've called him a nutsack, and that's like my favorite thing.
Well, because like nutsacks are so much more sensitive than vaginas, or you can leave this part out because it's gross, but like when someone calls someone a because I feel like it's right. pretty tough.
Yeah, I would agree.
So I would agree.
He is a nutsack. Okay. So I want to end this.
Sorry. We're like giggly this episode for some reason.
We are.
And I'm hot too.
I know. It's like, okay. So I want to end this episode with the final part of what the judge said at Castro's sentencing before they took him off. So I left this out earlier because I wanted to include it here. So he said, quote, "Now for Miss Knight, Miss De Jesus, and Miss Barry, as well as your young daughter, we celebrate your futures. We acknowledge the faithfulness of your families, your friends, and all others in this community who so fervently believed that you were alive. On behalf of the judges and the staff of this court, we wish you continued success and a sense of peace." And that they did. And that's what we will be covering in next week's episode on this case.
Wow. I have no words.
I know. The judge said it all. So I'm excited to share next week's episode because it's, finally, like, kind of the whole reason we wanted to start this podcast and saying how like strong and resilient they are and sharing kind of where they are now.
Yeah, I think it's a great conclusion.
All right, you guys, stay tuned for next week.
Catch you later.
Bye.
Next time on Inhuman, the Monster of Cleveland. Still to this day, she writes in a journal and draws all the time. She still misses her Joey and owes her survival to him, holding out hope that she'll see him again one day. So Michelle also got to fulfill one of her biggest dreams, which was going to Disney. Of course, I had to
add that in. Oh, that just gave me chills.
I know.
I didn't know that. Aw. And I thought this was so cute. Amanda placed a live, laugh, love sign above the fireplace to remind her that in the house, she made a promise to herself that once she got out, she would remember that every moment is a gift. So Gina was really just trying to catch up with the world. She talked about how, like, her cousins would talk about Twitter and Google and stuff like that, and she would have to learn about that type of stuff. The next day, they were over in the West Wing, and when Amanda was coming back from using the restroom, she turned the corner and saw then-President Obama talking to Gina and Beth. Like, she was not expecting it. He told her, quote, I know. He told her, quote, "I heard you were coming to meet the Vice President, and I wanted to make sure I had a chance to say hello."
We just want to thank you guys so much for listening.
To see key photos from this episode, along with some behind the scenes, follow us over on Instagram at @inhuman_podcast.
If you're loving the podcast, let us know by subscribing and leaving us a review. It lets iTunes and other platforms see that you're enjoying our content so we can be discovered by new listeners.
We can't wait to bring you next week's episode. Until then, keep it human.